You're listening to Under a Red Glow, a photography podcast covering the wide spectrum of the art and history of photography with an emphasis on chemical, darkroom, and alternative-based processes. Be sure to visit us at www.underaredglow.com. And now your host, John Milliker Jr.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Under a Red Glow podcast. My name is John Milliker, and with me in studio is my co-host and lovely wife, Christine.
Good evening.
We are currently live on Facebook. Now, when you hear this, if you are an audio listener, you will not be hearing this live. So don't go trying. This was last week. But we are currently live on Facebook because, you know, when Christine gave me such a hard time into making a podcast, I said, okay, well, I'm going to do something and we're going to make it as visual as possible. And she said, oh, well, some of the other podcast people, what they actually do is they'll actually live stream their podcast. And eventually I'd like to bring up photos that we can bring up. Like if we're talking about a process or talking about an event, we can do that. What do you think, Christine?
Sounds good to me. And while we're doing that, we can come up with things that relate to what we're doing and stuff.
Great. Yeah. So, you know, make sure you like us on Facebook under a Red Glow. We have also cross-posted the live video to my personal page, which is John Milliker Photography, and that's where we are. Now, we're probably not going to keep the live video up. However, tonight is a special video, but we're likely not going to keep the video up, and it's going to be something, you know what, you've got to be ready for it. However, we fund the show through our Patreon donations, and if you want to start with a Patreon donation of at least $1 a month, you will get not only will you get these episodes early, you will get the live streams early, I guess, right? And you will get an ad-free experience. And we do an after show, but Christine, we may not be alive for an after show. Do you want to tell us why?
Because with tonight's podcast, we are going to be eating death nuts.
What is a death nut?
Well, there's 5 levels of death nuts, and they are peanuts that are covered with different types of pepper powders.
I think the last nut is the death nut. The other ones are happy running through a field nuts.
Maybe. Right?
Maybe. The last one is the second to last one. What's it called? Pain sets in. So like I said, we might not be alive for an after show. I may not even be able to click the button on my mixer over here and turn off the show. So if you're hearing this, that's a really good indication that either A, we didn't die, or B, we're staying with the evening with the family and we're getting ready to go home. But our family was smart enough to tie all this up in a little bow and upload it to Anchor, to our podcasting service in our remembrance.
Yes.
That ain't gonna happen. So if you're hearing this, we probably survived. That's okay. As we talked about Patreon, we talked about, you know, with everything you get, you know, it's, we have so many people that just help us out, and that helps so much. Starting for $1, like I said, you get the podcast early, you get YouTube videos. If we do any YouTube videos early, you get some darkroom posts early, and
you get some special content that isn't put anywhere else also.
Well, absolutely. That's what we do. We have always had a hard time trying to find out what social platform is for everybody. And we really thought that Patreon would be mostly for people that, you know, they may know a little bit about photographic history or darkroom processes, and they may want to, you know, the closest I can get to having you guys join me in the darkroom, I figure that's what I want to eventually turn Patreon to. Now, what we can do, since we are kind of doubling up, right now I am showing our first Patreon Under a Red Glow kind of perk, and this is a book on our first 4 episodes, and likely we will throw in maybe our first 8 episodes, since now we are on 8 and we are such slackers into creating this book. But right here in my hands, I have this book that we've designed, and it's something we want to keep doing. As I said, I want to make this podcast visual, and this this little glossy book in my hands, it's personally printed on color laser. I get the color laser glossy paper stuff made, and it really helps me show a lot of these processes and things like that. And it's going to be anybody who is a Patreon supporter of at least something that gets mailed. And that's $3 for a postcard, for a darkroom postcard. If you support us at least $3 by the end of September, let's say hopefully. September, by the end of September, I'm sending you one of these as well. And if you support us for just a buck, I'm going to make the PDF available as well. So I think that's very, very fair. And I'm done peddling that.
Okay.
What was our episode last? In fact, our episode, now that we're recording on Tuesday, our episode actually dropped today, episode 7. And lucky number 7 was all about, would you rather be lucky or?
Or know what you're doing.
Or good. Would you rather be lucky or good? Thank you, Christine, for knowing exactly what we talk about. But would you rather be lucky or good? So I hope you check that out. And I think I'm technically cursed.
Why?
Because everybody would remember that I talked about how it took 3 laptops to get a good laptop.
Yes.
One without massive amounts of background bleed. One without without burnt pixels and things like that. Well, and then we talked about the mixer.
Right.
We are on our second Rode digital whatever mixer. And I'm on my second phone. I got a new phone, and one of the speakers was blown out. Now I got another new phone, and the battery has a problem. So I think I'm just gonna replace the battery and be done with it. It's not that difficult. And we need to send our Rode mixer back in. So that's likely going to be this weekend. And we actually recorded podcast episode 9 today. So I think we're going to, before we send this mixer back out, I think we're going to finish that episode 9, get it the heck out of here, and
have it all ready.
Hopefully third time's a charm for the laptop, third time's a charm for the phone. How about the mixer? So
hopefully.
I think I'm technically cursed. Just FYI.
Well, the rest of 2020 is cursed, so why not?
I like the way you think. I like the way you think. I had an event this past weekend, and it was our first event of the season, first outdoor event of the season, I guess I should say. It was at Old Bedford Village in Bedford, Pennsylvania. And you know what? It was so difficult getting the clothes ready, getting the tent ready, going to this, you know, this old village in Bedford, Pennsylvania, and setting up all of our Civil War stuff, setting up our camp, you know, taking the camera. I had mixed all fresh collodion, and it was tough. It was one of those things where I was like, would I rather go to one event, or would I rather just sit there and say, you know what, to heck with 2020, I want to go. I'd just wait until spring, right?
Right.
But I had so much fun. I can't tell you. Christine couldn't come. But I had so much fun at Old Bedford, just seeing our old friends, making new friends, just getting my hands silvered up again. You know, we're not using our normal microphones and stuff, so I've got to hold the microphone. But I've got all these nice silver stained hands, which is just awesome. Talked to so many great people. Talked to some photographers. One lady, she does what a lot of photographers do. What a lot of photographers do is they will walk past us.
Yeah.
And they kind of won't even make eye contact, and then like once they get too far, they will then turn around and they'll take a photo of like one of the old cameras or whatever. So I saw her and I tried a new tactic. So I saw her and I posed for her, and I did the normal pose where I'm standing there and I've got the lens cap in front of the old lens, and I said, and once she got her photo, I said, now you got to come over and you got to learn how to play with this camera. And she's like, oh, no, I know. It's like, come over and see your camera's granddaddy. I guess I think it was a Canon with like a 70-200 lens.
Mm-hmm.
And she came over, and I showed her everything. I said, this is how we focus with the bellows. This is how we move things. This is the lens cap, no shutter. And I was using your 1868 lens, which didn't have a water house stop. So there's no aperture control at all. And she really enjoyed it. And I think I found the way to pull people in that may be afraid that they either think that they don't have anything to learn, or maybe they're afraid that they don't know the right questions to ask.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. And that has been our problem in the past with a lot of those people. They seem like they're either intimidated or that they know too much to come over and talk about this stuff. And
I always say that with photographers. When you're learning, you get to a plateau where it's like, I know everything, bow to me. And then once you do that and you crash hard, you realize you know nothing. Like, you know nothing. And then that's when the learning can go. But I feel so many more people kind of get stuck on that first plateau. And that's what it feels like. It's really weird because, I mean, we're working with 1860. We're working with chemistry that's 170, you know, the recipe, it's 170 years old. I mean, come on. There's nothing cooler than what we're doing at an event, I think. I also had this little boy, and his name was Nicholas.
Uh-huh.
Because I let him take a photo. Had a soul. I was varnishing plates from the day, and I had a little boy came up by himself. His family was somewhere else, but he's asking these great questions, and he probably was, Nicholas, if you're watching, bud, I'm sorry if I get your name wrong. I'm not good at your age. I'm sorry because I'm not good at ages. Maybe 11, 12 years old.
Uh-huh.
So he comes up and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm varnishing a plate, and I show him. I'm like, well, this is the last step of the process because this is silver, and silver tarnishes and it's very easily scratched. Okay. So he's following along, and I'm just doing the varnishing of plates, and he runs off and he comes back. And at that time I had one of the reenactors. He said he wanted to come over after one of the field things or whatever. So he came over and he wanted to get a plate done. And just then Nicholas comes over and he's watching. And I say, all right, Nicholas, because I was explaining to him he actually asked the question, how do you make the plate sensitive? Or how do you start the process? And I talked about the metal plate and I talked about the coating of the collodion. And I said, Nicholas, come on over and I'll show you. And I wasn't coating the plates outside my dark box. So I coated the plate outside the dark box and I showed him all that and I put it in the silver bath and I said, okay, well, I'm going to go over and set up for this soldier's portrait and this soldier's tintype. And I let him over, and at that time his family was with him. I said, okay, come on over here. And they were right there. So I let them all look in the back of the camera, and I got everything right. And I said, Nicholas, is that a good shot? And it's so funny because that's why I asked him his name. I said, what's your name? He says, Nicholas. And I turned to the soldier. I said, what's your name? He says, Nicholas. So it's Nicholas, Nicholas. And it was weird. It was weird doing the Instagram post for that because it was like young Nicholas took soldier Nicholas's tintype. So anyway, went out and got the plate and brought it back. And I said, who wants to take the photo? And of course, Nicholas's hand went right up. So I said, come on over, Nicholas. And I, before I put the plate in the camera, I showed him the elaborate shutter system, which of course is just removing the lens cap and putting the lens cap back on. And I said, okay, well, 2 seconds, because we were in the shade, 2 seconds. Okay. And he's like, okay. And he did a great job. And then I said, well, Nicholas, you know, of course you'd be, you'd get fame and glory for this, but you know, because you're working for Matthew Brady, you know. And then I had to tell him the story about Matthew Brady and Matthew Brady's photographers, which was a lot of fun. And I had, and on our Instagram, and I think I cross posted it to Facebook. We also, we got his mom's permission to take a photo of him holding the plate with soldier Nicholas holding right there next to him. And I made sure mom got, all right, mom, get in there and get a photo as well. So thank you, soldier Nicholas and young Nicholas for just taking my weekend from, okay, I'm glad I'm here, to I was really excited for being out there, because that is the coolest thing in the world when somebody shows that much interest, and it you know, without having to have their arm twisted from a parent. Oh, go ask this, go ask that. All the kids were asking all the ladies, what are in your pockets? I guess the village puts out like a thing, or maybe And I'll even give a shout out to the Button Baron in Gettysburg. And they're the ones that really set this event up at the Village. So maybe it was something the Button Baron kind of put out. I don't know who did it, but it's an absolute amazing event. And if you ever get a chance to go check it out, it is the Labor Day weekend Union encampment. And just everyone is just absolutely top notch. It was a heck of a lot of fun.
I'm so glad you had such a great time. I really wish I could have been there.
You couldn't go.
No,
you couldn't go. Why are we here, Christine? We already talked about we may not be living, but this is the Death Nut. And we kind of got an idea. Somebody recommended it to us because we kind of wanted to celebrate. And the thought being is, okay, well, the big thing now is all these like hot thing challenges, these spicy things challenges.
Yes.
So we said, okay, well, how about we try to get through photographic history?
Yes.
We talk about some photo history. We're not gonna do a big lecture. And then as we go through, we follow the rules and the challenge, and we see who dies first.
Yes.
Or to right in the middle between Christine and I, for audio listeners, there is a ceremonial spoon, and whoever grabs that spoon the first is giving up, because not only 20 feet in that direction over there, and I'm pointing past Christine, there is a freezer with two pints of vanilla ice cream, two single pints of vanilla ice cream, 1% milk, and also, what did you get? You got a quart of cherry vanilla ice cream.
Yes.
And I got a quart of, they call it Oreo ice cream, but what it is, it's cookies and cream, but instead of vanilla ice cream, it's chocolate, and it's my favorite.
Yes.
But the thing is do you want to read the instructions to us? Do you want to open this death nut up and kind of find out what we're doing?
Sure, let's open this up. Can you hold my mic a minute?
I can hold your mic. We don't have mic stands. Does it sound weird if I'm talking to both mics at the same time? Okay, there she's taken out. Now what this is hermetically sealed kind of plastic, kind of like the plastic that you would get pills in, and each there's five containers. Five little divots, and they are foil coated, and each one has a couple peanuts in it. So, Christine, read us about what this is.
So, the Death Nut Challenge Version 2 by Blazing Foods. Thank you for your purchase. This challenge is the hottest thing you will ever eat. You must review warnings on the box and accept the terms.
We didn't do that. Sorry, Blazing Foods.
No liquids or food allowed until completion. Chew entire contents of each level for 15 seconds. Wait 60 seconds before advancing to the next level. After eating the contents of level 5, the Death Nut, you must endure a 5-minute burn to complete the challenge. Good luck.
Ooh.
Just so that you know what this is, I looked up what each of these nuts have, what it says each of them have in it. The first one is coated in powder of the Carolina Reaper, which is 2,200,000 Scoville.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we have you read? But the problem is, how about we read them with each nut we
okay.
eat? Do we want to do that?
Well, we're about to do the first one, so let me finish
okay.
that one.
Okay, sorry.
And then the second one is a chocolate Buta pepper. And I couldn't find that pepper whenever I was looking. So
it doesn't exist. So it's going to be no problem whatsoever.
But, oh, sorry.
Put that over there.
I need my notes where I can see them.
Blazing Nut Foods. We did read a little bit at least. And
we know they advise you to
read
probably
stuff.
Not do this.
Wear gloves. Don't touch your face. Don't podcast while doing this. Oops. Right? We got to make sure we open up the right one. This one's called... number one, heat level is mild. It's called Getting Started, and this is the Carolina Reaper and the chocolate Butla pepper, Butla. All right, are we gonna? I don't want to use a ceremonial spoon, man. That would be kind of nightmarish, wouldn't it? I hope you're not one of those people that chews on pens, Christine. Christine just
I don't
used
chew
a
on
pen.
That end.
Christine just used a pen to break the foil on this thing, and I need to get a knife or something because I'm touching these peanuts as I rip the foil.
I am tempted to have a spoon here to spoon them out to us so we don't have to touch them with our fingers.
Well, here we go. We're gonna take two of them out. you pick which one. For the first one, you pick which one you want to eat, Christine.
I'm afraid to touch them.
Christine doesn't. She's very, very carefully and very cautiously. She's picking the one with the least, darkness on it. Are we
it
ready?
Smells good.
We gotta toast it. Clink.
Cheers.
And what do we have to do? We have to choose for 15 seconds. And then, did you finish the rules? You didn't finish the rules, did you?
That's all it said.
No, it says 15 seconds, and then you have to wait 60.
A minute. I said that.
Did you say that? Sorry. Everybody can yell at me.
You're not paying attention.
Everybody can yell at me on the Facebook page. I'm sorry. Well, I guess we should start talking about photographic history.
Yes.
Okay. Well, really, really to start photographic history, in the 5th and 4th BC, Chinese and Greek philosophers, they actually came up with the idea for the camera obscura. And the camera obscura, tell everybody what the camera obscura is.
Camera obscura is whenever you have like a small hole or something to peer through and light comes in, it reflects what is on the other side in the light upside down and backwards on the inside.
Why is that? Why does light?
Because light travels in a straight line. So whenever it crosses through that little hole, well, comparatively little hole, it keeps going. And therefore, it's upside down and backwards.
Great. And then what about the chemistry? Because we always like to talk about the physics aspect, lenses, camera design, things like that. The chemistry aspect, we had so many people out there that were really working in all these chemicals. And we found out that nitrated silver or silver nitrate, which is silver dissolved in nitric acid, actually made a very light sensitive solution. And you can actually see the darkening on my fingers, Christine. But the problem is, and we had a gentleman by the name of Johann Heinrich Schultz in 1727, I think he was working in that. And he was playing with it, and he would actually work with some photograms. But the problem back then was we did not know how to stop the reaction. Once we coated, and he found out that coating leather was actually much more sensitive than the paper they had at the time. He would coat leather, and likely because of the salts in the skin, because salt makes silver nitrate that much better. And his dream of trying to create something in like that camera obscura, because we all knew about the camera obscura back then, just didn't work. All right, I don't know how much we heard of that, so I won't go back too far. But the problem is silver nitrate would darken in the presence of light, and at this point, we had no idea how to stop that. So what happened was people would actually make photograms, and they would hide these photograms up in a book out of the light, and then they would have little viewing parties under candlelight, and they would show their photograms. So yes. Are we ready to go? Here we
Cheers.
Go.
That was hot, but that's not too bad.
You could taste the chocolate.
Yeah,
I guess I should have warned people about chewing. Take the mic away from your face when you chew.
Okay, now I feel it.
Okay, just have it for the record that Christine, her face is completely red and her eyes are watering and she's coughing. I have a, and it, you know what? It sneaks up on you, that chocolate buca pepper.
It tastes really good. It's just spicy.
It's very spicy. Oh, okay. Well, let's go on. In 1822, Joseph Nicephor Niépce would create the first surviving in camera photo,
mm-hmm.
and it was called "View from Window at La Grasse," and. Yes. This is the first time he's created something, and of course we're skipping some minor players, but these are the major players. But Niépce would take a pewter plate, and he would figure out that this asphaltum or bitumen of Judea chemical, he knew that this chemical actually hardened in light. Because what happened was artists would make these etching plates and they would use this same process, but they knew that if you waited too long after creating this surface, it would harden, and therefore it wouldn't dissolve away. And that's what Niépce used. He used this asphaltum, this bitumen of Judea, and he would call this the heliograph. And what he did was he put this in one of those cameras, and he exposed it from the window at La Grasse. And at first, people thought it was an eight-hour exposure because both buildings were in sunlight. And the problem is somebody, and I really need to find out who this is, but somebody actually experimented with this. I want to do this as well. Somebody experimented with this, and they did a very similar exposure, and it likely was several days of this exposure for that, right?
Right.
So it is the oldest surviving photograph, and it is at the Harry Ransom Center at the University of Texas. But the problem is it's very faded, and it's a negative because, of course, the dark bitumen on the plate hardened. And what Niepce did was he took, ooh, this peanut in my teeth is kind of kicking me in the butt over and over again. But he would then take this oil of lavender and the oil of lavender and like a white petroleum that he would use to dissolve off the unexposed bitumen of Judea. So are we ready for the next one?
Guess it's been more than 60 seconds.
Okay, here we go.
I'm not sure I'm ready for this. That's not the right one.
That's not the right one. Okay.
One. Okay. So the second nut is called.
No. I'm not going to play that game. She put half out for her and a whole out for me. So we're going to do two halves because the problem is there's more surface area on two halves than a whole. Okay. What's the second one?
So it's Carolina Reaper ghost peppers, which is and mixed with ghost peppers. And ghost peppers are 855,000 Scoville. And again, the Carolina Reapers are 2,200,000 Scoville.
All right. Well, I think we're doing live. So we ready? We'll do this, and then we'll talk about, I guess, Herschel, because Herschel will be next.
Cheers.
I will tell you, these nuts are very stale. They taste very stale.
That one I can do so far. That doesn't mean it's not going to get hotter.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that's terrible. Yeah, it's...
it keeps making me cough, though. Yeah. And it kicks in later.
That was definitely... It wasn't much hotter.
No, not bad. Much worse.
I almost wonder if the extra heat is being masked by the previous nuts heat.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Tell me a little bit about Sir John Herschel.
Sir John Herschel was an astronomer who also had a strong like of chemistry and photographic processes.
Okay. There it goes.
Sorry.
Christine's dying.
I inhaled and something went back in my throat.
Was it fire?
Yes.
But Christine's talking about that, I'm pulling out the next two nuts, and they are super red. Oh, my goodness.
Well.
No, go ahead. Talk about Herschel. Now, what did Herschel help out Wedgwood and Niepce with the problem of silver just continuing to expose?
He found the very first fixer, didn't he?
Yeah, he discovered that sodium thiosulfate, or as a lot of people would call hypo, he figured out that would dissolve the silver halides.
Yes.
And that is still used today, more so for traditional processes, but that is definitely still used today. And you know what?
So Sir John Herschel, he's also famous for making the anthotype and the cyanotypes.
Okay.
But both those were in 1842.
Was 42 cyanotype?
42. They were both the same year, 1842.
Okay.
I'm thinking 1843 because that's when Anna Atkins used it to make the very first photo book.
I think we should go a little bit further in history because apparently we are hot sauce lightweights compared to this challenge because I'm kind of at that fearing for my life stage, and we are only on peanut two.
Yes.
With peanut three staring us in the face from the table.
I'm not sure we're going to make it past
Let's just do all next three. Let's do all three in a row.
No.
I don't want to die. So tell me a little bit about Sir John Herschel.
So
tell me about the cyanotype process, and then tell me about Miss Anna Atkins and their family and their friend Constance.
So there is some dispute there as to who the first woman photographer was, and that's between Anna Atkins or Constance. My brain's not working right now. My mouth
William
is on fire.
Henry William Fox Henry Fox Talbot. Talbot. There you go.
It's his wife. And while John's sitting here fanning his mouth. And
it's not against the rules.
Nope. And they were all friends. They worked in the same circles and so it's hard to say who really was the first female photographer. But Herschel developed the cyanotype to copy his notes. But Anna Atkins saw other uses for it. And she's like, we can use this to make a book on all the British algae. And in 1843, she started work on her first book, of which I know there were at least 11 books. But you have to understand that to make a cyanotype book and make multiple versions of it, you had to make each book on its own. And copy the book by hand, since each page was handmade.
Okay.
So she had to put a lot of work in these books. So to know that there's 11 copies of it out there, that's a lot of work.
Now you got a chance to see a special one.
I got to see the one, and you did too.
Yeah.
The one that Anna Atkins made and gave to Sir John Herschel, which to me makes it so much more important because he was the inventor of the process.
And she personally inscribed it to him.
Yes.
That's great. Okay. Why was copying so important for this book before they had such a process like photograms or cyanotype
right.
photograms? Why, what was the problem?
You had to hand copy each page by each sentence, each word, each letter by hand. That's
one more
the
talking
way to
about
do
the algae, the identification of the algae. If you were terrible.
Prior to that, the only way to make it and put a picture of it in a book was for someone to draw it. And if you weren't good at drawing, or if you wanted, you could take some license with it to some extent.
Right. But that's the problem. You can't do that with
photography,
with nature. You can't do that with nature because, you know.
Right.
Oh, you ready? Ready for the next one?
No, but
now here's the thing
that big one's big.
That big boy is huge.
Put him
oh
back.
My gosh, I'm putting him back. Now these are this so, is level three.
This is
heat level medium, which I'm calling BS to that.
So this
one's called getting real.
And the peppers are the Carolina Reaper, which is in all of these, just to be honest. And 7 pot brain strain peppers. And its heat is 1,000 to 1,350,000 Scoville.
Okay.
So quite hot.
Quite hot. All right. We ready? Because I honestly don't know how good we're going to be after this to finish photographic history. So maybe, but we can sit there and talk about it and hopefully get it off our minds. So here we go. Bottoms up.
Cheers.
Clink.
This might be the pepper I read about that is fine when you first eat it and is really sweet. But as it sits, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter.
And remember, we're not allowed to drink anything. We can't drink. We can't eat anything. Except for, hell, and one good thing that we thought about, we saw in the box, is there's only 25 calories. You know, somebody reviewed this online, and they said, completely not worth it. You only get like 10 peanuts. How many do you want? How many do you want? I'm watching Christine. She's breathing in and out. I feel complete. You know, the nose is running, so I do apologize for that. The nose is running, and I got, I think you're right. That's hitting. I think my teeth are on fire. My
teeth are fine. My tongue is burning.
Under my tongue is really hurting. my sinuses are saying, hey, what's going on up there?
Oh. Ooh, my throat is burning.
Both our eyes are completely watering. All right, let's see if we can get you through.
Ooh. Let's move on from Herschel and
let's
Anna
see if we can get to Daguerre and William Henry Fox Talbot. Oh, it's not better talking at all. It's totally worse talking.
I'm not sure I could do 40.
Well, the ceremonial spoon is still unclaimed. Oh.
But okay, so the next person in the process was Louis Daguerre, who made the daguerreotype.
Louis Jacquemin Daguerre. You know, he was a showman, so he probably would want you to use his whole full name. And he was a Frenchman. He would work with Joseph Nicéphore Niépce, who we talked about earlier with the heliograph process. And they would enter into a contract where Louis Daguerre, I'm starting to tear up. But they would work on, do not take any history we're talking as face value, because wow, it's currently at ice cream in that freezer. I may climb in the freezer and eat that ice cream. But all right, Louis Jacquemin Daguerre, Frenchman, he would work with Niépce. He would enter into a contract. Niépce would die of a heart attack, but their contract would still be kind of valid, and the first son would work in this contract with Louis Daguerre, and that son was Isidore Niépce, and he didn't like it. He didn't contribute anything. Nothing. He didn't contribute anything to the heliograph process. But Louis Daguerre was working on a different process, and he knew silvers and iodides made a silver iodide, which is a very photosensitive thing. My brain is now hurting. But that's a wipe my nose there. But he would come up with basically the daguerreotype process. Now, Louis Daguerre would try to shop it around, and he didn't really find anybody. He would eventually give it to the French government for a lifetime pension. The French government would give it as a gift to the world, and that was the daguerreotype process. It was a copper plate that was silver plated, highly, highly, highly polished. It would be sensitized in iodine fumes and exposed and then developed in mercury, heated mercury fumes. Nasty, nasty, nasty stuff. Because I feel like I am going mad as a hatter. That is where the term came, mad as a hatter, because the hat makers would actually push these felt hat forms. Is your face numb? Because my face is numb. I think I'm drooling.
I'm not that bad. I'm just trying to keep my mouth open because when I close it, it burns.
Ooh, that is bad. So, I'm fanning Christine's face. They would use, the hat makers would do this in overheated mercury as well, mercury vats. And you would go crazy breathing in the mercury. Okay, so over in England, unbeknownst to each other, William Henry Fox Talbot would work in the similar process. But instead of silver plate, he would use silver nitrate on paper. And he would make what basically would be today is a paper negative. And it was a negative. He was making these images. They were negative. He would then make a copy of it by exposing the same emulsion through the negative, and negative times a negative equals a positive. Right, right.
Right.
Louis Daguerre, the showman, the diorama, the theater expert, the guy that named the process after himself, he would create the daguerreotype, which was seen by one person at a time. It was nicknamed Mirror with a Memory because one person could see it at a time.
Right.
Where William Henry Fox Talbot, wait, my nose real quick. William Henry Fox Talbot would invent the calotype process, and he would make the process that could be infinitely replicable, reproducible. There we go. Brain and working.
My mouth is recovering. I'm afraid to move on, though.
Okay, well, let's talk about, do we want to go into Frederick Scott Archer?
Yes, let's
Frederick Scott Archer. Before we eat the next one, we may disappoint, and we may sit there and say this is the last one for the next one. Four may be the last one. But Frederick Scott Archer would come up with a process that was very similar to the calotype process. He would basically find out that exposing the calotype through paper, you had a lot of softness because of the fibers of the paper, of many other things. He would come up with a way to basically put all those salts. He would come up with metal salts that would be put into a collodion, which was a nitrated gun cotton, nitrocellulose. I'm talking fast because I want to get this over with. But it's a nitrocellulose. He would put these metal salts in there. He would then let it set up. And Christine, you okay? I thought Christine died there for a second. He would let it set up. And then once it's set up just enough that you would put it in a silver nitrate solution and then make the emulsion. Now, why don't you just let it dry, Christine?
Because once it's dry, the collodion, which is used to hold everything to the plate, doesn't let the chemicals get in and out. So it'd be stuck at wherever it was.
Think of collodion like gelatin, where gelatin and gelatin used in film and used on dry plates a little later can dry and then swell up again. Collodion was not that lucky. Collodion would dry and it would be stuck if you let that plate dry at all. And that's when, you know, a lot of the photographers, Matthew Brady, of course, and his band of 20 to 22 photographers and photography wagons, they had to make this process to the point where they had to coat it, they had to sensitize it, they had to shoot it, and they had to develop it before all that dried out.
Right.
Wet plate collodion process, because it had to stay wet. Right?
Yes.
Right. Are we?
I'm scared.
This one's called Pain Sets In.
And this is two times the Carolina Reaper plus the 7-pot Douglas pepper, which is the one that sets in later.
Oh, no. You told me that was earlier.
Oh, but this has double the Reaper on top of the last one.
This is not good.
Okay, that's a big peanut.
That sucker's sticky, too. That's going to stick going all the way down.
I'm scared.
That is not only going to stick.
Can I just lick it?
No, you can't lick it. That is not only going to stick all the way down.
I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that.
We aim to be classy.
I didn't know that was coming.
On the Under a Red Glow podcast.
Well, I'm sorry.
I just hope that with peanut 4 and 5, I don't lose any other bodily function control.
Like swallowing?
Like breathing. Like heart beating. We're getting ready to hit peanut 4, at least I think. Like I said, the ceremonial spoon is still on the table, and that is instant relief to go to the freezer and get some cold, tasty vanilla ice cream.
Creamy. That's all I care
creamy
about.
Creamy vanilla
ice cream. I don't
care about
the cold. Creamy, wash the heat
stuff
out of my
out
mouth.
Well, are we doing it?
Are we? You were worse
you
than
will.
I was.
Oh, I was not worse than you was.
I was not drooling.
I only drool. Okay, I was drooling. Okay. We ready? Level number 4. All right, go for it. We're chewing.
I got it down.
Uh-huh. It's down. Christine is now crying. She is not the crying level. This one was sticky. I said it was sticky. It stuck to every tooth.
I'm trying to clean it out of my teeth without it touching
and you're
my
just
tongue.
Touching you're touching your tongue. That one is...
So far, that was better than the last one.
Yeah, the number 3. Now, this one's
unless
just,
3 numbed us for 4.
I think this one is just waiting. It's waiting until we sit there and talk. There it is. My lips are numb. Do I still have lips?
Yes, you still have lips. Okay. My lips are not numb.
Okay. Where did we talk about? We talked about Matthew Brady. Let's talk about Civil War.
We did not get to Matthew Brady. We were talking about...
We talked about the process. Okay, the Matthew process. Brady.
He started as a daguerreotypist.
He was a darn fine daguerreotypist, but Matthew Brady, his eyesight was plaguing him very early, and my lips are gone, so I may sound a little funny. Oh my goodness. I just scratched my ear with the finger that I've been eating these hot things with. So if my ear falls off, we'll know what happened.
I'm afraid because I keep touching my mic with those fingers.
Yeah, well, we'll sterilize everything before we put it all back away. But Matthew Brown, I'm going quick because I want to get this podcast done. I want to eat the next one, and I want to then just eat the heck out of ice cream. We need to wait 5 minutes after the next peanut, though. And this one is now hitting me. So
it's hitting me, but not as bad as the last one did. Your eyes aren't watering as bad.
All right, and you're real not quick. Chilling. Matthew Brady, he would have some connections. He would work Alexander Gardner from Paisley, Scotland. He would become good at the wet plate process. He would love photography. He would come over and work for Matthew Brady. Some people say that Matthew Brady may have funded Alexander Gardner's family to emigrate to the United States from Scotland. And within 2 years, in 1858, Alexander Gardner is so good with the process that he takes over running Matthew Brady's DC studio. And Alexander Gardner is just amazing at imperial size plates, 17 by 20, if I remember correctly. All right. Alexander Gardner, honorary captain, General George B. McClellan, would get on the battlefield, Antietam Battlefield, on what date, Christine? Let's see if your brain's still working.
September 17th.
What year?
1862.
Good job. Alexander Gardner would get on the field 2 days after the battle. He would photograph the dead at Antietam, and and the plates would go back to New York, where Matthew Brady will exhibit them as the dead of Antietam by none other than Matthew Brady. Matthew Brady did not shoot them. Alexander Gardner, other photographers didn't like that. Alexander Gardner, I am spitting. Alexander Gardner will then leave Brady's employ, finish out the war. We got to do it.
Your eyes are bright red now.
We got to do five. Death Nut is, we're at Death Nut's door. A reporter said that if Matthew Brady did not lay the dead of Antietam at our doorsteps, he's done something like it. And this was the first time that a lot of the American public was seeing the...
Tiny one.
Absolute carnage. Yes, you made the tiny one. Absolute carnage of the war.
Oh, this is good. Fair enough, the codeine off that one.
Christine is reaching for, oh no. Christine has reached for and grabbed three of the remaining death nuts. One is tiny. One is huge, but with a little bit of the stuff knocked off of it, and the other one is kind of medium. This is the 13 million Scoville death nut,
which is two Carolina Reapers with a Moruga scorpion and mixed with capsaicin crystals.
They couldn't make these hot enough. So what they did was they put 13 million Scoville capsicum crystals on this.
And just so you know, this is supposed to be spicier than the toe of Satan and 1,000 times hotter than a jalapeno. And to put this on a scale, most bear sprays that they use to stop bear are 3.3 million Scoville. This is 13 million Scoville.
I'm getting a little dizzy. I will say I'm getting a little dizzy, and I'm feeling it like right here. I'm starting to feel it. So I'm going to say right now that we're going to end this episode. Christine and I are going to...
I don't want to do that one, I don't think.
That's fine. You need to make the decision. You either eat the death nut before we go, before we hit the... We're going to mute the microphones, and we're going to do the outro music. We will leave the live stream going, which has been going for an hour. And we will probably eat the ice cream on live stream. If you want to catch the... And then we'll come back later and do the live show. If you want to catch the live show over at Patreon. And wow. I've lost brain functions.
My mouth has stopped burning so much again.
How about we talk about George Eastman?
Okay, let's talk about George Eastman.
Are you going to do it?
do the tiny one.
You've come this far. No, that's the same. It's the same amount of coding. Okay. George Eastman would work with dry plates. 1880, he will found the Kodak.
Eastman Kodak.
Well, he would do Eastman dry plates to start. 1880. 1885, I believe, he will purchase the patents for the film, roll film, dry emulsions, which is gelatin now. These dry plates and fill roll film is gelatin. And in 1888, George Eastman will found the George Eastman Kodak. He used the word Kodak because it had that strong K. He and his mother loved anagrams, things like that. And that would kind of mark the end for wet plate collodion. However, wet plate collodion would survive until about the 1920s. And that's pretty much...
Move into the use of film, which moved into digital and brings
us to
today.
George Eastman was fantastic. I mean, he did the whole give them the razor for free and sell them the blades kind of business model. He would work with a cabinet maker to work with the Brownie cameras and bring photography to the masses. And what was... We're going to eat this, and then I want you to tell me what the Eastman Kodak slogan was after you eat it. And then as soon as Christine says what the slogan was for the Eastman, I'm going to hit the outro button. I'm going to mute the microphones, and we're going to go over and get the ice cream. We will run to the freezer and get our ice cream. We'll come back, and we'll do it on stream. And
aren't we supposed to wait 5 minutes?
We're supposed to wait 5 minutes. Okay, let's eat this real quick, and as quickly as you can, you're going to tell me what the slogan for Kodak was.
I will try.
Do you know it?
I think so.
Okay, and if not, I'll say it.
Help me.
I want to thank everybody for joining us. Episode 8, you've been giving us so much love on through email. We've been getting lots of great views. Visit us at underaredglow.com. Email us podcast@underaredglow.com. My mouth is still numb, which I'm happy about because this is probably going to help this last thing. And if I can't even remember my outro, but if we've earned your share with your friends and family of any skill level photography, artistic medium, or whatever, we'd appreciate you sharing, subscribing with your favorite podcast. I'm drawing on the microphone still. Subscribing with your favorite podcast app of choice and giving us a big old thumbs up, especially for doing this crazy stuff. I don't think we're going to do this again. So it's not like an every 8 episode kind of thing. We just wanted to do it. Sounded like fun. But if you're on stream, stick around. We'll probably put this up online or something. I don't know. My brain has stopped working. So let's just do it. Ready?
Cheers.
Here we go. The freshest peanut. Hurry up and get done. Oh, that's liquid fire.
I don't know if my tongue is numb.
Tell me that, and we're going to go to outro.
Kodak. You take the pictures, we do the rest.
You press the button, we do the rest. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you later. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.